Hello, this is the Archaeology News Weekly, and I'm David Clunnelly. This news is brought to you in partnership between Stonepages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and to view details on each story, including the source, please see the Stonepages website at news.stonepages.com. Now, the main headlines from around the world are as follows. A 3,000-year-old state has been found in North China. The Giroft inscription in Iran may be the earliest written language in the world. Ancient remains are found in downtown Miami, but fears for ancient remains from underwater sites in UK are raised. The M3 case concerning the Tara motorway opens in the Irish High Court, while elsewhere a new highway opens up the past of Ireland. Pennsylvania hunters are advised that they should not use the prehistoric weapon, the atlatl, and a Neolithic skeleton is put on display in Bulgaria. Australian rock art is vandalised in Tasmania. Tahagrit and Skorba temples are open to the public in Malta. And mysterious Mongolian megaliths are studied. An incredible 4,200 cliff tombs are found in China. And Irish farmers are urged to be the countryside's guardian. And finally, a fascinating book about the ancient carvings in Yorkshire is published. A small ancient state dating back nearly 3,000 years, which has never been recorded in historical documents, has been discovered in North China's Shanxi province. Archaeologists deduced the existence of the previously unknown state, Peng, from inscriptions on bronzeware excavated from two ancient Western Zhou dynasty tombs around 1100 to 771 BC. The owners of the two tombs, discovered in Hengshui town of the Jianxian county in Shanxi province, were the rulers of the state, Peng Bo, meaning the Count of Peng State, and his wife. Li Bo Qian, director of the Archaeological Research Centre of the prestigious Beijing University, said that the discovery of the Western Zhou graves in Hengshui is the most important archaeological discovery since the excavation of the graves of the Marquess of Jin, another state of the Western Zhou dynasty, in Chuo country of Shanxi province. More than 80 tombs have been excavated at the site, with the tombs of Peng Bo and his wife the largest ones. The couple were buried side by side, with many funeral objects such as bronzeware, carriages and jade, said Song Jianzhong, deputy director of the Institute of Archaeology of Shanxi province. One of the most important finds in the graves is the remains of a pole covering the coffin. The remains of the pole are still a vivid red colour, and phoenix patterns can be seen. This is the oldest, best preserved and largest tomb decoration object so far discovered in China. A total of 16 pieces of bronze were unearthed from the two tombs. The inscriptions on the bronze show that one of the tombs belonged to Peng Bo and the other to his wife. Ding bronzeware was a symbol of power and status in the Western Zhou dynasty. Archaeologists note that 5 pieces of ding were found in Peng Bo's wife's tomb, while only 3 were found in his. Studies by 5 linguists of an inscription in Giroft in Iran indicate that the Elamite script is 300 years older than that of the civilization of Susa. The inscription was carved in a brick, and only the lower left corner of it remains. Archaeologists believe that Giroft was the location for the origin of the written Elamite language, where the system developed first and then spread across the country. The inscription at Giroft is the most ancient written script found so far. The inscription was discovered in a palace, although it is not yet known to which king this inscription belongs. It's definitely Elamite, though. More studies are needed to determine the exact date when it was inscribed, but the suggestion is that it is the most ancient language so far discovered. Further excavations are being carried out to find the rest of the inscription. The city of Giroft is located close to the Halil Rud site. Halil Rud, located on the basin of the Halil Rud River, and it enjoyed a rich civilization. Many stone and clay artifacts, as well as other archaeological finds, belong to the 3rd millennium BCE and have been discovered during the archaeological investigations. Elamite language is only partially understood by scholars. It has no relationship to Sumerian, Semitic or Indo-European languages, and there are no modern descendants of it. After 3000 BCE, the Elamites developed a semi-pictographic writing system called Proto-Elamite, and later a cuneiform script was introduced. Archaeologists investigating an American Indian burial site in downtown Miami in Florida, where a condominium development is being built, say that it dates back around 2,000 years. The site is near the original shoreline of the Biscayne Bay. Robert Carr, director of the Archaeological and Historical Conservancy, speculated that the Tequesta may have prepared the bodies there for burial. The tribe was known to lay bodies on the beach to be defleshed by crabs and vultures. Archaeologists will study and catalogue the remains and then reinter them on the same site in accordance with the state law and after consulting with representatives of the Seminole and the Miccosukee tribes. They are long known that a wealth of archaeological material is buried under downtown Miami. Archaeologists excavated a village on the north shore of the Miami Village in the 1980s. The Miami Circle, a round limestone formation 38 feet in diameter, believed to be the foundation of a prehistoric structure of the Tequestas, was then discovered in the 1990s. Divers face a desperate race against time to recover 8,000-year-old artifacts from the bottom of the Solent before they are lost forever. The underwater site of Boldner is the only one yet discovered in Britain, and dates from when the sea level was 12 metres lower than it was today, when the Isle of Wight would have been much larger and the Solent was a dry coastal valley. It remains because it was covered in silt and protected from erosion as the sea rose above it. Most Stone Age sites on land have lost all associated organic remains, having been exposed to weathering. However, underwater, the oxygen-free mud can preserve delicate objects for thousands of years. Unfortunately, now this is being eroded by currents and is likely to be gone in 2 to 3 years. Radiocarbon dating has underlined the international significance of the ancient drowned landscape and given archaeologists further tantalising evidence of human occupation. Tests have revealed material thought to have been the remains of a wooden structure that are around 300 years younger than the surrounding ancient oak trees that have been dated to 8,400 years ago. Gary Momber, director of the Hampshire and White Trust for Maritime Archaeology, commented on the site, saying that the dates have been very interesting because they demonstrate that the timber structure is not contemporary with the oak forest, which remains on the floor of the Solent. If it is the remains of an occupation site, the structure would have been sturdier and more substantial than the windbreak or tent-lined structures, as there are some sizeable timbers still remaining. The structure is also next to a pit filled with burnt flint that is believed to be an oven or hearth, and archaeologists now hope the two can be linked with further tests. But the rapid rate of erosion of the Boldner site means it is now a race against time before it is gone forever. The Irish High Court has begun hearing an action by conservationists seeking to have the M3 motorway rerouted from the present route through the Tara Skryne Valley. The action is being defended by the state. On the 4th of July last year, Mr Justice Liam McKechnie granted leave to bring proceedings challenging the directions given by the Minister of Environment, Dick Roche, regarding the treatment of 38 known archaeological sites along the stretch of the proposed M3 motorway. Campaigners led by Mr Vincent Salafia are questioning the constitution of existing legislation concerning the protection of national monuments. They want the M3 rerouted away from the Hill of Tara as they are worried about the impact of the development on the archaeological landscape surrounding it. The government, Meath County Council and the National Roads Authority argue that the national monument is located at the Hill of Tara and the surrounding areas are not part of the monument. Pat Wallace of the National Museum said last year that he said that the region was the most important of its type in Ireland, if not in Europe. That view was challenged by the government's chief archaeologist, Brian Duffy, who contended that it was not possible to link the surrounding areas with the Hill of Tara because the various archaeological sites were not all of the same period. The legality of the planned M3 route will be debated in the hearing, which is expected to last 6 days. On a small personal note here, I feel it should be pointed out that the proposed route actually takes the motorway further from the Hill of Tara than the present motorway. And while in Ireland, the 18-kilometre stretch of modern roadway, which will stretch from the Swinford bypass to Carrig Castle, west of Ballachadreen, County Mayo in Ireland, has unearthed what it describes as a treasure trove of archaeological material. Indications of prehistoric settlements have been unearthed at several locations, but a site at Low Park is a double delight. It was apparently a settlement during the Neolithic period, 2,500 years BCE, as well as during the early Christian periods of 500 to 900 CE. A 15-metre-long souterrain or underground passage, probably built for the refuge during the times of cattle raids or storage, is one of the main features of the Low Park site. Items found at Low Park and other locations along this new stretch of bypass include pottery, stone tools, pieces of flint, a bronze ring pin, lignite bracelets and glass beads, and a cooking trough preserved in the peat at Charlestown. The State Game Commission staff concluded in an internal study that Pennsylvania hunters should not be allowed to use the prehistoric weapon known as the atlatl to kill deer. One enthusiast for the spear thrower said that he was very disappointed. "We were hoping that Pennsylvania might be progressive and draw hunters from other states before they jump on the bandwagon." This was said by Pennsylvania's Atlatl Association president, Gary Fogelman of Turbotville. He said that atlatl enthusiasts had been hoping to be allowed to use the weapon to hunt game the way hunters did thousands of years ago. The atlatl is basically an arm-length stick with a notch at one end used to propel a long, flexible dart like an oversized arrow. The Game Commission's staff report said the atlatl is not deadly enough to kill the deer quickly and humanely. The recommendation, though, is non-binding. It was issued about 2 weeks before the State Board of Game Commissioners is scheduled to vote on whether to permit atlatl hunting. Animal rights activists are concerned the weapon would only wound the deer. Fogelman said, "Any weapon can wound an animal without killing them." Alabama allows the use of atlatl for hunting deer, although few people use it there. Game Commissioner Roxanne Pallone said previously that allowing the weapon might help expand hunting. Sales of general hunting licenses have fallen by 22% since the mid-80s. A skeleton of a woman from 5800 BCE is now on display at a museum in the town of Vratsa, some 120 kilometres north of Bulgarian capital Sofia. A team of Bulgarian archaeologists led by Georgi Ganitsovsky discovered the skeleton last summer in the excavation works of a Neolithic tomb near the Bulgarian village of Ohodin. The Wilderness Society has labelled as disgusting a malicious attack on an ancient Aboriginal rock carving in Tasmania's northwest. The group says vandalism of circular petroglyphs at Arthur River on the Tarkine coast is reflective of a wider management issue of the region. It's calling from the Tasmanian government to ban off-road vehicles in the area and says vandalism would not have occurred if the Tarkine was better managed. The rock carvings are believed to be around 2,000 years old and were damaged with a chisel-like implement. The Tasmanian Aboriginal Land and Sea Council believes vandalism is racially motivated and could be an extension of violence displayed during the Sydney riots. Heritage Malta, the National Agency for Museums and Cultural Heritage, is opening two sites at Megar, Tahagrat and Scorba, on a weekly basis. These sites, both of which have been included in the UNESCO World Heritage List since 1992, were previously closed to the public and could only be visited by appointment. Tahagrat consists of two adjacent temples, the older one of which dates to the Gantia phase, 3600 to 3200 BCE. These were excavated under the direction of Sir Temi Zamet in the 1920s, after he was shown a field containing an interesting mound of stones. The older temple has a semicircular facade with a monumental doorway. This leads into a rectangular central court that in turn leads to three semicircular rooms, one on each side. The second, smaller building is accessed through an eastern room of the larger building, which was modified in antiquity to make space for the second building. One of the most notable finds from this excavation is a small limestone model of a roofed building, which is now exhibited at the National Museum of Archaeology. Scorba Temples, located about a kilometre away from Tahagrat, was excavated by David Trump in the 1960s. This excavation resulted in the discovery of two temples, one phase dating to the Gantia period and the other to the Tarxian, 3150 to 2500 BCE. Scorba was occupied long before the temples were built, though. The earliest remains consist of a stretch of wall dating back to the Gardalam period, 5000 BCE. Remains of wheat, lentil and barley seeds, together with pottery, animal bone and stone tools, were found next to this wall. A more extensive structure was unearthed in the field east of the Tarxian phase temple. This consists of a stone foundation of two huts, dating back to the Red Scorba phase, which is 4400 BCE. The discovery within these structures of a number of female figurines and a goat skull led the excavator to suggest that these structures may have been some sort of shrine. Both sites are open to the public every Tuesday morning. Tahagrit from 9:30 a.m. to 11 a.m. and Skorba from 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. More information about both sites can be found on Heritage Malta's website, which is www.heritagemalta.org/heritagesites.html. For more information about visits or group bookings, please contact Heritage Malta on 2123-1236 or email maria-elena, that's E-L-E-N-A, dot Zammit, Z-A-M-M-I-T, at gov.mt. The Darkat Valley in Mongolia marks the boundary between the vast Central Asian steppe and the forested Siberian lands. From the earliest time, this region had been a crossroads, a place where the worlds of Central Asia and the Arctic met. The result is a landscape littered with dramatic archaeological monuments, especially huge rock burial mounds known as kirgusurs, and upright stones carved with mysterious symbols. It's likely that Bronze Age nomads erected these graceful and mysterious megaliths throughout the northern regions of Mongolia and southern Siberia around 1000 BCE. Though some scholars think they may be the work of the later Iron Age people who appeared around 700 BCE. Known as deer stones for their crafty depictions of flying deer, the monuments rival Europe's megaliths in their intricate designs and careful craftsmanship. Just why they were created and what role they played in ancient nomadic cultures are two of the many puzzles of Mongolian archaeology. Since 2001, a multidisciplinary team from the Smithsonian, coordinated by archaeologist William Fitzhugh, has worked here in the largely overlooked Darkat Valley. In an effort to understand this slice of the Arctic world, Fitzhugh has put together a large team of specialists, including Harriet Ray Biobain, who has been studying ways of preserving the region's deer stones, and this summer used a 3D laser scanning system to make extraordinarily detailed records of the monuments. Dubbed the Deerstone Project, the expedition's goals are ambitious. Fitzhugh hopes to find evidence of cultural links to a circumpolar artistic tradition that could stretch from Mongolia all the way to the Pacific Northwest. As early as the 1950s, American anthropologists had theorized that the Mongolian Bronze Age art influenced Eskimo death masks and ivory ornaments with shamanistic and animal motifs. Fitzhugh's work in Mongolia is aimed in part at looking at these possible links. This is a fascinating project, and I highly recommend that you type Deerstones Project into Google and get the full story. Archaeologists announced that more than 4,220 cliff tombs have been discovered at 680 sites near Shanluo, a city in western China's Shanxi province. The cliff tombs are large, of various shapes, and are scattered on a 160-kilometer-long belt joining Danjiang Valley in the east to the Qianyou River in the west, a scientist said from a provincial archaeological research institute. According to Yang Ya Chang, a researcher with the institute, most of the single-room tombs are stone caves with rectangular shapes and are 3 meters deep, while the multi-room tombs are flat and carved with wells and shrines. Dozens of short inscriptions with the owners' names and the titles of emperors' reigns were also found in the tombs. One cliff painting and 8 bas-reliefs of human faces or beast heads were also found. Irish farmers must become guardians of the countryside to ensure that archaeological monuments survive, it was claimed by the National Heritage Council. Heritage Council Chief Executive Michael Starrett said Ireland lagged behind most European countries in how it manages the countryside. The Rural Environmental Protection Scheme is a new opportunity for farmers and landowners to get recognition for the role they play in managing and protecting our heritage, environment and landscape. He added that they perform a unique public service that benefits everybody in Ireland. The Heritage Council wants to see a considerable change of emphasis so that in agri-environmental payments are going to the farmers that contribute most to heritage management. The Council also called for the Environment, Heritage and Local Government to carry out a nationwide audit of national monuments. A Heritage Council survey in 1998 found that one-third of the state's archaeological monuments had disappeared or had been destroyed since 1840. The rate was found to be highest among earth-based features like ring forts and intensive farming areas such as the southeast of the country. The change of land use as well as erosion and natural weathering were cited as features and factors of the decline. Heritage Council archaeologist Ian Doyle said that each decade sees a 10% reduction in the number of monuments. Landowners are obliged under the National Monuments Act to maintain monuments on their property. The Heritage Council also called for the government funding for farmers who protect local heritage and recommended that incentives to be introduced to develop walking and hiking routes on their property. The Irish Farmers Association, the IFA, welcomed today's recommendations by the Heritage Council and said that farmers had already played a pivotal role in preserving natural heritage since the beginning of the schemes in 1994. The IFA's Rural Development Chairman, Patrick Devalley, pointed out that over 50,000 farmers have taken part in agri-environmental measures like preserving habitats, archaeological sites, traditional farm buildings and maintaining of stone walls and managing hedgerows. Rock art researchers Paul Brown and Graham Chappell have compiled the most comprehensive study yet of rock art, which they have discovered across the moors of North England, and published their findings in a new book, The Prehistoric Rock Art in the North York Moors. Mr. Brown joined forces with Mr. Chappell to spend hours walking the moors to find examples of rock art before taking wax rubbings and transferring the details to their archives. In a bitter irony, the flames which left a blackened scar across more than 600 acres of North Yorkshire's moorland in a fire that started in September of 2003, it may have been instrumental though in allowing the discovery of new rock art. Rock carvings were exposed when vegetation burnt from the landscape of Filingdale's moor, allowing Mr. Brown and Mr. Chappell the chance to log details of these long-hidden markings. Mr. Brown said that up until now, the North York Moors had been a virtually unknown area for rock art when compared to places like Northumberland. There is no way that anyone will be able to conclusively prove what the carvings represent, though. Even if we do believe that we now know what they mean, there is no way to prove it. But the intriguing part is to think that Neolithic people spent so much time creating the rock art. These were the first farmers, hunters and gatherers, and it's fascinating to think what the actual art meant to them. Examples of rock art have often been found close to sources of streams, raising the question as to whether the purity of the water was an integral part of a religious ceremony. Hundreds of cairns and barrows which cover the moors also include carved rocks, prompting speculation that ancient artwork was inextricably linked with burial ceremonies. The book touches on the work of early antiquarians such as Canon Greenwell, a much-travelled clergyman who became fascinated with rock art, and also the famous Scottish surgeon Sir James Simpson, who take a keen interest in the carvings from the North York Moors. The nefarious exploits of the 19th century barrow diggers from Whitby and Scarborough, who plundered monuments for fine pieces of flint to sell in local markets, is also covered in the book. So, finally, remember that new archaeological and heritage employment opportunities, as well as an expanding UK heritage calendar, library section, and also chances to get onto UK heritage courses, can be found on Badger. That's www.bajr.org. And remember that more can also be found at Stonepages, news.stonepages.com. Thank you very much for listening to Archaeology News Weekly. We hope you'll return again next week.